Now, from the left coast, another in-depth interview from Peter B. Collins. Peter B.'s been talking about news and politics since Watergate and generously shares his knowledge, wisdom, opinions, and outrage here because his friends and family can't take it anymore. Peter B.'s an independent progressive who upsets Democrats and Republicans as conditions require and is one of the few lefty pundits who predicted Trump would win. This podcast is funded entirely by listeners like you, and subscribers get first access to these in-depth interviews. When you're ready, go to peterbcollins.com/signup. Now, here's your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Hey, thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast here at peterbcollins.com. When it comes to Russiagate, I've always found it just downright unbelievable. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions. Great people like Brian Carey, Don Cisney, Julie Dupree, and Paul L. Sesser. I know many of you share my skepticism. You've endured 4 years of hearing me call out the claims that Russia meddled in the 2016 election to help defeat Hillary Clinton. And that specifically, it was Russian intelligence agents who hacked the Democratic National Committee servers, gave the data to WikiLeaks to help in that effort. And one of the sources who has driven my skepticism all this time is Bill Binney, who returns today, 30 years at the National Security Agency, where he served ultimately as the Worldwide Technical Director. Bill, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, Peter, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, and I appreciate that you've always been available and responsive when I've asked you to discuss these issues. And I know that there is a generalized corporate media blackout on you, the work of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And I applaud you because you have been on platforms that are some people consider fringe. I saw an interview with you from some of the supporters of Lyndon LaRouche. I know that part of the reason for that is that the Washington Post doesn't call. Rachel Maddow was content to smear you but never permitted you to speak on her program. And so you held a press conference yesterday that we're going to detail in a couple of minutes here. But was there any mainstream media in attendance?
As far as I know, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we haven't talked for months now. Has anybody from one of the major cable channels like CNN or MSNBC interviewed you or contacted you to get your point of view?
No, that's for sure. No, they don't call me.
All right. And what about Fox News? Is Tucker Carlson interested in your narrative?
No, I haven't had a call from him for quite a while.
All right. Sean Hannity, the president's best buddy?
Nope.
Really?
We're going down the list here. Actually, Peter, you called me.
Okay? Well, that is an honor of sorts. But my point is that your point of view deserves wide dissemination. Because unlike the largely fictional narrative that was developed by the Democrats, picked up by friendly media groups, used to hammer Donald Trump for years, it led to the Mueller investigation. You and I did a lengthy podcast where we went through the entire Section 1 of the Mueller report and raised important questions about it. And, you know, we live in this media silo era where what you and I are discussing is out of bounds. And I want to warn progressives, and you know, I'm not trying to include you on the left, Bill. Your politics aren't the same as mine, but I respect that. And I think people need to be aware that what Trump calls on Twitter Obamagate is going to be resurfacing in the months ahead, and I think will be a central theme in the reelection campaign. And I think that it is going to further discredit the corporate media that continues to promote what is a largely disproven narrative.
Factually disproven, by the way, not speculative. There was no guesswork at all here. It was all forensics based on the data published by WikiLeaks and the data published by on the web for anybody to view if you want. I mean, they can all go out and anybody can go on the web and find it and look at this data and verify it. It's not a question of, you know, an opinion. It's not an opinion. It's an observation about the factual evidence that's already been documented on the web.
And, Bill, since we last spoke, one of the key elements that has been revealed was sworn testimony by Sean Henry. Henry was a top cyber official at the FBI. Then he joined CrowdStrike, which people will recall is the firm that we're told examined the servers of the DNC and came to the evaluation, because we can't call it a conclusion, which they publicly promoted. Oh, yeah, this is consistent with the behavior of Cozy Bear, APT-29. This was Russian hacking. And Sean Henry's testimony, which was under questioning from both Adam Schiff, the Democrat who chairs the Intelligence Committee, and his Republican colleagues, led to stunning testimony from Sean Henry. And he said, well, you know, we assessed that Russians had been nosing around in the DNC servers. But in fact, we still have no evidence that they exfiltrated any data. Now, Bill, I have a little trouble with that term exfiltrated. Can you define it for us?
Well, it simply means they pull it across out of the servers of the DNC across the web somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when he admitted that, it didn't get covered in the various news outlets that have promoted the fiction that there is evidence that Russia hacked the DNC, because we all know it, because it's been so widely reported based on anonymous leaks and evidence that we were not permitted to see.
Well, you know, it's just like all the comments made by people like Rachel Maddow and others in the mainstream media about me being a conspiracy theorist when I was simply talking about observable facts, you know. They really haven't looked at the testimony from Henry. He also said that they had indications that it was exfiltrated, but they didn't see it exfiltrated. Now, I think Henry was talking about the same property, the FAT file format property that we were talking about, that said it was downloaded or copied down to a thumb drive or a CD-ROM locally, because that modifies the last modified time to round it off to an even number. Well, that was true for all 35,813 different emails that WikiLeaks published from the DNC. All of them had that property. So I think he was referring to that, because that would give him an indication that somebody took the data, but it wouldn't actually be transferred because it would be on the thumb drive inside the network. You know, so I think that's what he was talking about, but he cleverly never told anybody, and that's what's going on here. Nobody really tells anybody specifically what they're talking about. They just make generalized statements and never back it up with anything specific.
So let's go back, because as I recall, Sean Henry was at the FBI until about 10 years ago. And I don't know if your tenure at NSA overlapped with his duties at FBI, but what is your perception, Bill, of the capabilities of the FBI in cyber compared to your former organization, the NSA?
Basically, any time FBI had a problem, they called NSA to get them fixed. That's basically it.
So you were tech support for the FBI?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, objectively, how do you view the credentials of Sean Henry?
I don't really think they're rated that high, but, you know, I don't really have any firsthand evidence. I don't know the guy. I've never talked to him, so I can't really say. I just think that what's been done here has been very sloppy and unprofessional.
Mm-hmm. So, is there anything else that has surfaced that you want to point out? Buttresses the Binney theorem, and the Binney theorem, which we've discussed on previous podcasts, and I don't want to go into great detail about that. People can go to the search window at peterbcollins.com, just put in Bill Binney, and all of our previous conversations will come up. But your theorem was, and you tested it, that the download speeds required to hack and remotely exfiltrate this data could not be achieved. And you tested it from inside the United States, from various points in Europe and maybe on other continents. And so, to my knowledge, your theorem has not only not been disproven, but it stands as the only theory that is based on actual evidence, unlike what St. Bob Mueller gave us in his report.
Yes, but there actually is more evidence than that now.
All right, tell us.
Which we've come across.
All right.
It goes like this. Lucifer II's data that he originally published with the Russian signatures on it in the 15th of June of 2016. Some of the fellows who have been working with us in the UK have been looking through that data, and they found that five of the items that he put out there on the 15th of June that had the Russian signatures were also published by WikiLeaks in the Podesta emails, except they didn't have the signatures. So in other words, that told us very simply, Lucifer II inserted the Russian signatures in the data. And the whole thing, of course, is a fabrication. Now, we also found out from Vault 7, if you looked at that, that was the CIA, compromise of CIA hacking tools and different programs they had.
Correct.
In there, it also said that the program Marble Framework, which was there to make for the CIA to hack into somebody and make it look like someone else did it, mm-hmm. like Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and the Arab countries, okay, that was used one time in 2016. And we think we found that time, and that's in that Podesta emails that were mapped back to Lucifer II. And so that for us, this means the entire evidence that we're assembling is pointing back to CIA as the creator and fabricator Lucifer II. So
all
in
right.
other words, and it's some of the timelines, some of the timestamps that were a part of the data that came out with Lucifer II showed East Coast as the origin. So that's kind of That's kind of reinforcing the idea that Lucifer II is a creation of CIA, and the whole thing was a fabrication by CIA, and picked up by Mueller, and picked up by Rosenstein in his indictment, all founded on that fabrication, and they all knew it.
And how do we know they knew it?
Because of some of the data you're seeing coming out right now, that they're all in collaboration with to basically spy on President Trump, and to make sure that that was their insurance policy, to make sure they could get rid of him if once he got elected.
Mm-hmm. That was that reference was between Lisa Page and
yep.
Peter Strzok, the FBI. She was a lawyer. He was a top agent.
That's right. But this kind of seals the fate of the entire Russiagate thing, and all these people need to be. You know, I'm just a country boy, but when I started looking at this, I started listing out all the crimes these people were committing to do this, not including sedition and treason and, you know, obfuscation of evidence, fabrication of evidence, perjury, obstruction of justice. I mean, I had a whole list of things that I thought they should be charged with, and I'm just waiting for Barr and Durham to do it.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, as we look at this, in some ways it's hard to figure out where the starting point is. But we know that 4 years ago, next week, was when they opened Crossfire Hurricane.
Yeah.
And then they opened a subset of that. A Crossfire has a different name that was the Mike Flynn Russian contact investigation. And so 4 years ago is when they first applied to the FISA court and got the warrants, the warrant for Carter Page. That has now been exposed by the Justice Department Inspector General. And let me just insert here that I've long been a critic of the FISA court. I don't think a secret court like that has any place in what's left of our system of government. And I believe that it should be dismantled or, you know, severely reformed. And it frustrates me that the only calls to make changes are related to the case of Carter Page and the Trump campaign. That said, we know that the necessary renewals of those warrants were based on, in part, the Steele dossier and continuing claims by the FBI that eroded as the investigation continued. So that by the time Rosenstein renewed it, which would have been in the spring of 17, he was either lied to or he knew that there was not sufficient basis to extend that warrant, but he did it anyway.
Yeah, and there's more to it, too. When Rosenstein put forth his indictment together, he put together a charge that the Russians had trolls in there, you know, subverting the election, 2016 election, and he mentioned one was the IRA, the Internet Research Agency out of St. Petersburg, Russia.
Right.
And he never expected anybody to come over here, because they're Russians. They're not going to come over here and be under U.S. indictment. So he never expected anybody to come over. But the Internet Research Agency sent lawyers in to challenge that because they said they weren't in any way connected with the Russian government. And so the judge in the court there said, okay, government, prove it. And they couldn't prove a thing. And so the judge admonished them and said, you people are never to mention this again about the IRA. They are in no way connected with the Russian government, and you have no proof of any of it. So don't you dare say that again. So, but that was one peg that was thrown out. The other was Goose for Two, and that was thrown out. And then all that other stuff they listed in the indictment, talking about GRU agents doing this and that and the other thing, they don't source that information because it didn't come from any government source. And because anything that was done with the NSA, CIA, the FBI, in terms of wiretaps or things like that, to find and follow this kind of activity is classified. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, if it's put into an indictment, it has to be redacted if they're going to publicly expose the indictment, you know? So it wasn't redacted. So it didn't come from a U.S. government source. Otherwise, they're in violation of Title 18 codes governing handling of classified material. And Rosenstein didn't want to be indicted for that. So, you know, so that wasn't the case. So I assume it came from a third party. And there's no control of evidence from beginning to end. So there's not admissible in a court of law. So even that should have been challenged, but that wasn't. So, I mean, the whole Rosenstein indictment, the whole thing, Mueller, the whole thing was a total fabrication. Everything that I can find about it says that the entire thing is a provable fabrication. And I might add, excuse me, I put that in sworn affidavits, all the evidence of Russiagate being a fraud, in the affidavits in Roger Stone's case and also in General Flynn's case. And the judges in both cases, both of them Obama appointees, would not allow my testimony in court.
Hmm.
So they wouldn't even allow any comments about the forensics analysis of supposed Russian hacks and the basis for it into any court of law. So, I mean, they're hiding it. So the courts are a part of this charade, too.
And, Bill, one of the things that I scratch my head about is that there's been a struggle over the efforts by Democrats to get access to the transcripts of the Mueller grand jury. And the Trump White House has been actively preventing that. And it seems to me that based on what you and I believe, that it would be beneficial to Trump for that material to be released, just as Sean Henry's testimony is beneficial.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, yeah.
So can you suggest why the Trump team would work so hard to keep it from being released?
Just because of the attorney general saying that this grand jury material and you can't release it because it's not releasable in any form, and they have to keep all that kind of thing secret.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by Department of Justice policy, and also I'm not sure what kind of laws cover that, but I'm sure they do. There are laws that cover that.
Well,
for protection.
I mean, the lower courts have ruled in favor of releasing this based on the Watergate precedent related to impeachment. Now, impeachment is over, but it does appear to me that, I just don't have a clear idea of why Trump and his lawyers would prevent the release of that, because it does seem like it would embarrass the Democrats and further undermine the Mueller investigation.
Well, I'm sure that's the case, but I don't understand that either, other than the potential that they objected to any kind of grand jury material being released. That's all. It's the only thing I could think of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it made no sense to me either. I thought every aspect of this should have been released, everything, whether or not NSA had data or GCHQ, and we had that data from them, or whether CIA or FBI, any of them. They should have released the entire thing.
Well, and I've made the case all along that the president has the absolute authority to declassify anything, and he has declined to do so. And I find that as hard to understand as the grand jury issue.
Yes, and according to and this is what I've been arguing all along, according to Executive Order 13526, Section 1.7.
Okay.
This is the executive order that governs all classification for the U.S. government. So under that section, it says you cannot classify or maintain classified or not declassify any information that's evidence of a crime, fraud, waste, abuse, corruption, and there's a number of other things. But it's all in there, and anybody can Google that and look at it, and that's basically it says that any kind of evidence of crime, you have to declassify. So my point is that not only would it be beneficial to him, but it's a must to declassify.
So, Bill, we're speaking on Friday, July 24th, and yesterday you held a briefing for the media related to a number of these issues, and I didn't get to watch it. Could you give us, four or five of the key points that you raised?
Well, it was just that, all the DNC emails published by WikiLeaks showed that they were all downloaded to a storage device and then physically transported before WikiLeaks could publish them, and we could prove that by forensics, and also that Goose for Two was a fraud, and that the evidence of Goose for Two pointed back to CIA as the origin of the Goose for Two character, and that the indictments by Rosenstein and all, and Mueller's report, all of that was a fabrication of fake. It was just a general crucifying all of the things that they dragged this entire nation through for the last 3.5 years.
And so, Bill, you seem to have some confidence in Attorney General Barr and his designated investigator, John Durham. And my feelings are mixed. I feel that Barr is so nakedly partisan, and that Durham's record on matters of this sort, where he's been given special duties, is not exceptionally encouraging in terms of getting at the actual truth. Do you disagree with me on that?
No, I have hope that he will.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope that he will, abide by the law and do the right thing for the country. I mean, otherwise, I look at it, and the way I put it in that interview on that you're talking about with the LaRouche group, I also Barbara Boyd brought this comment up about President Lincoln's address in Gettysburg, where he said, "We are We are a republic, our government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the question now is whether or not we're going to perish from the face of the earth. And that's basically the situation we're in now. That is, I viewed it as the greatest threat to this republic since the Civil War.
Well, it certainly does have those dimensions. And even though I am not a supporter of President Trump, as you know, I do not in any way rationalize this effort that was first intended to prevent him from being elected and then used to try to marginalize him once he was in office. And we've seen some of the evidence of the way the so-called deep state has prevented him repeatedly from using his authority, for example, to pull U.S. troops out of Syria. That is one of the issues where I fully support Donald Trump. And on three different attempts, he has been thwarted by those embedded in the Pentagon and the intelligence community.
Yeah, that's right. And I was encouraged by his decision, you know, after the Iranian shot down that unmanned drone.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pentagon and other warmongers in our government wanted to start shooting at Iran, and they had a proposed attack that they wanted to execute, and the president asked them how many people would be killed, and they said, well, about 170. And he said, well, for a drone, for an unmanned drone, we're not going to kill people. And that was it. So that stopped that. And I was encouraged by that because it just basically said he was opposing the warmongers. And I was glad to see that. You know, that was one of the principal things he was, a lot of people voted for him because he was opposing that, mm-hmm. opposing wars overseas.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the other brushbacks that was, I believe, engineered by the Democrats was as things were winding down in Syria, and that was, in my view, Barack Obama's biggest blunder to get involved in that regime change operation.
Yeah.
But they you know, tried to control Trump by suddenly developing this passionate support for the Kurds. And, you know, it's a very complicated picture, and the way I break it down is that Obama made a big mistake inviting Turkey to the clusterfuck in Syria, and that Turkey has its own agenda, which includes eviscerating Kurds of virtually every description, and that when the U.S. was drawing down its forces, retreating, if you will, from Syria, suddenly the Democrats said, oh, you're going to leave the Kurds to be slaughtered?
Yep.
And nobody cared about the Kurds when we were using them as mercenary forces.
Yeah.
And, you know, bringing them weapons from Libya, the whole mess there. And so you see these things pop up periodically. And I got to ask you about Russia Bountygate, okay? Because this surfaced as an intelligence leak. 3 weeks ago as we're speaking. And the allegation is that Russia was paying cash bounties to the Taliban for bringing them the scalps of Americans. And first of all, it's a war, right? And
yeah.
we have routinely used bounties. We placed bounties on Saddam and his sons. We currently have bounties running on the president of Venezuela, and the chief justice of the Supreme Court there just got slapped with a $5 million bounty this week. And so the U.S. routinely uses bounties, and just the suggestion that Russia was doing that, and we still don't have any real evidence for it, was used by Liz Cheney and by Democratic colleagues to pass an amendment to the must-pass defense funding bill that ties the president's hands. He can't even, you know, reduce the U.S. troop count in Germany, which I find that's another issue where I support Trump.
Yeah.
But this idea that we've got 8,600 Americans and however many contractors on the ground in Afghanistan today, and I'm grateful that my nephew did a tour there and he's back. But they have no mission. They are sitting ducks in many respects. The government there is a mess, where we still have these two leaders claiming that they won the election. And so Trump's instincts to withdraw American troops, even if it's just for, the political claim that he can make to get reelected, that he brought our troops home from Afghanistan, that has been blocked based on the latest claim of Russian misbehavior.
Yeah, but again, and I would point out again that in this case, just like in the case of Russiagate, it's all hearsay from people. There's no substantive evidence produced by any of them to even imply that any of this is going on. All they're doing is saying this is what we, this is what we confidently believe. Or how did they put it? They called it, we have high confidence that this is going on.
Yeah.
Well, how many times do they have to lie to us before we start saying, challenging them and making them prove what they're saying? I mean, they've been consistently doing that for years.
So, Bill, when you were working in the intelligence community, was there such a thing as good old days where they didn't generate lies to feed to the American public?
Or exaggerations, not too many outright lies, but certainly major exaggerations, especially when it came to weapons and weapons purchases. So that was always a questionable thing. They always came up with numbers that sought more funding, basically.
Well, and that goes back to some of those Reagan presentations in the 1980s, where we had to outspend the Soviet Union in order to drive them into the ground.
Yep. I mean, that's been the funding mechanism for the Department of Defense for many decades.
Mm-hmm. Bill, I want to change to another topic. Craig Murray is the former British ambassador, I think, to Uzbekistan. He is a strong ally of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And he recently reiterated that he wrote to Bob Mueller and offered to be interviewed. He had information that he wanted to share. And I believe it's that when he came to Washington to receive the Sam Adams Award, that he became a courier and that he took some media with emails on it from a contact that he met at American University and ferried it to either a WikiLeaks contact in Britain or specifically to Assange at the Embassy of Ecuador. Have you been able to confirm that?
Yes. In fact, Craig Murray sent me an email saying exactly that. Yeah.
Were my details off at all?
No, you weren't. They were right on.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's exactly right.
And so, this is just another stunning omission by the Mueller investigation, which, so many Democrats invested so much in and believed, was going to produce the evidence to support the Russiagate narrative. But when we see that people like you and Craig Murray have information that you have proffered, in your case, to the courts in the case of Stone and Flynn, and they completely reject it, that is evidence that the cover-up goes beyond the operatives that we've talked about, the media, the political parties, and the elements that ran the whole Russiagate investigation from the FBI through to various intelligence agencies.
Yeah, and it goes into the mainstream media and also the courts when the judges won't let testimony in that doesn't go along with the existing fabricated narrative of the FBI, CIA, and NSA and the Department of Justice and State and Department of, I don't know anybody in government that wasn't involved in this hoax, But I mean, when the courts go along with that, they're a part of it too. So.
Mm-hmm. And, Bill, I want to confess that for a long time, I just kind of pounded Mike Flynn. Not that I felt his contact with the Russian ambassador was so troubling, but just because as a former intelligence official himself who ran the DIA, that he should have known that his conversation with Kislyak was being monitored or recorded, and that it was silly for him to lie. But Scott Ritter, who is one of your colleagues in VIPS, persuaded me. We did a podcast around one of his articles related to the Flynn case, and it was the second Crossfire investigation that was opened into Flynn's dinner in Moscow at the RT celebration, where the Green Party candidate was at the table and Vladimir Putin dropped by for a few minutes, that opened up that second FBI investigation at the end of July in 2016. And Ritter persuaded me that Bill Barr had a technical legal reason to dismiss those charges, because the eventual 2017 efforts that led to Flynn's resignation, the claim that he had lied to Peter Strzok and the other FBI official who went to the White House to frame him. I have to say that there is, again, I consider it highly technical, a legal basis to dismiss the charges in the Flynn case.
Sure, it's called intimidation. I mean, he was threatened. They were threatening to go after his son if he didn't cop a plea.
Well, the other thing that complicates it for me is that I couldn't believe that Mueller gave Flynn a pass on his unregistered lobbying for Turkey while he was an advisor on the Trump campaign. To me, that was much more serious than anything related to the contacts with Kislyak.
Yeah, I think they had a basis for doing something there, but I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what the extent of it would be. But certainly they had something there, but nothing to do with Russia. Yeah.
Well, and they didn't bring charges based on that.
That's right. Yep.
So I have to concede, and it was difficult for me because of my bias, that the decision to drop those charges has a firm basis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Bill, one of the other things that went on in the same time frame, and I want to get your thoughts about this. Major media outlets sued to force the release of information in the Roger Stone case. And the media got the information. They only used part of it. The part of it they used was there was confirmation of a direct contact between Stone and Julian Assange, but it was in 2017, not in the critical period of 2016. But the other portion of the information that was released by the FBI to these media organizations is that Roger Stone had at least 9 contacts with a minister without portfolio in the cabinet of Benjamin Netanyahu in the state of Israel, that their conversations included references to a meeting that this minister had at least once, if not twice, with candidate Trump, and that there were discussions about Israel helping the Trump campaign by providing intelligence. And I bring this up because in that period around Christmas time of 2016, when we're all told to focus on Mike Flynn talking to the Russian ambassador, there was a back-channel effort that included Flynn and Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of the president, by representatives of Israel to get them to try to pressure the outgoing Obama administration on Obama's decision to not veto a resolution at the United Nations which was critical of Israel for its settlement policy. And as I look at that, I see that as a covert channel of a foreign government that was attempting to meddle in the 2016 presidential election. And it is paralleled by a public channel where Netanyahu came to Washington in the spring of 2016. He was invited to give a speech to a joint session of Congress. He made clear his preference for Trump in his public comments at that time. And then he invited Trump to Israel in July of 2016 for what amounted to an unofficial state visit. And so I don't say this to try to, you know, just to zero in on Israel, but my point is that there was meddling in our election by a foreign government that can be proven, and it wasn't Russia. It was Israel.
Yeah, but also, I think if you look a little harder and closer at what the British were doing, you can also see a lot of meddling from the British side, too. So, you know, well, I was surprised, you know, when they said that all of the reporters on RT had to register as foreign agents.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I mean, we shouldn't stop there. Everybody, like in BBC and any other Al Jazeera, all of them, they all should register. You know, I mean, why are we being inconsistent in what we're doing?
Well, because Russia is the boogeyman.
Well, that's supposedly true, but I mean, when you stop and think about it, who alerted us to the Tsarnaev brothers during the before the bombing attack in the Boston
Marathon? Yeah,
it was the Russians.
Yeah.
Gee, doesn't that mean they're trying to help us do the job? And shouldn't we reciprocate and consider them as allies in that effort? I mean, that's what I would look at it as.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bill, what else would you like to mention here that I haven't asked you about related to the crumbling Russiagate narrative and the need for full exposure and accountability for the people who drove it?
Well, there's another program I don't think has been talked about too much. It's called The Hammer. That was run out of CIA. We have a whistleblower here was involved in that for CIA, a contractor. And he said that Brennan and Clapper set up this program called The Hammer. Excuse me. And what they did was they used it to tap in and spy on the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency and so on. And they did it illegally, and they did it only through a group set up in CIA specifically so that they were separate from the rest of the entire government. Now, the reason they did it is pretty simple. If you've noticed that some of the latest from the unmasking that's coming out, people were getting picked up for unmasking other U.S. citizens during the Obama administration.
Right.
Well, the reason that they know about this is because anybody who going into the NSA database looking at data from NSA will be recorded. In other words, there's a record of them asking for it. So there'd be a record of everybody asking and even a record of everybody interrogating the NSA databases because that's recorded in the network logs. So in order to avoid being detected and accountable or visible to other parts of the government, they had to set up a separate way of collecting information. That's called the Hammer, and that was done strictly within CIA, using and tapping into the existing system and using it. And that meant that the CIA, Brennan and company, could look across at anybody on the U.S. in the U.S. and never be known by any other part of government.
Mm-hmm.
So they could do that in secrecy. Even with the secrecy from the other parts of the U.S. government. So that was the one that was being, I think, my understanding is currently being investigated, and I hope they do that. And maybe one of the things that's delaying Durham from doing what he's doing, but he should be moving quickly on that. I mean, it's not that hard. Come on, guys, you know. This is pretty straightforward, you know. So it's a program that should never have been allowed or permitted, so.
Well, and again, to me, this whole game of unmasking and the release, this is one of the other things that has surfaced in the last 7 months or so. The list of the people who requested unmasking in the Flynn case. And it's also the attendance list for the White House meeting, I think it was on January 5th,
yep.
The day
yeah.
before they Comey lowered the boom on Trump in New York.
That's right.
And
yep.
that attendance list is really the cast of characters in what Trump calls Obamagate.
Yes, that's right. I agree totally. Those people, all of them, they need to be held accountable for what they've done. I just think if we don't have that, we have a dual system, and then I will be personally calling the Department of Justice and continue calling it the Department of Just Us. Mm-hmm. And we, the public of the United States, are not included.
Well, and Joe Biden was at that meeting.
Yes, he was.
And he had filed an unmasking request.
Yep, that's right.
And that's why I began this conversation by saying I want my progressive listeners to understand that Russiagate is going to be back and that it could seriously undermine Biden. It could lead to at least the outlines of investigations and or criminal proceedings against other members of the Obama administration. And those appointees who populated, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, the upper echelons at that time.
In fact, I think it's probably going to take most of them.
Well,
we'll have to see.
One more thing I'd like to pick your brain about, Bill, and that is that unlike Russiagate, I do believe that ultimately the Democrats proved much of their case without John Bolton in the Ukraine investigation. But my biggest discomfort was that it originated with a whistleblower who doesn't fit the description of any whistleblower like you of the others who I'm aware of or who I've talked to over the years. Do you still have discomfort about the origins of that? And do you believe that it was a legitimate case against the president?
I have very, very strong questions about that. A lot of it questions that haven't been answered, like this fellow was basically a CIA plant in there, and that, there were a number of suspicious things about it, like, for example, the modification of the IG inspection rule. See, because when I and the others of NSA made our complaint, the Department of Defense Inspector General took our complaint and said, okay, now I have to investigate it to verify it. And they took 2.5 years to do that, but they did investigate it. Now, when this guy made a complaint to the DNI Inspector General, there wasn't any investigation. He just turned it over to the Congress. You know, so I mean, where is the verification and validation of what the guy was saying? And as far as I can see, there wasn't any. And that's what the Inspector General is charged to do. That's what they're supposed to do. And that's true of all the other investigations that I know of from any of these IGs. They do an investigation. Mm-hmm. In this case, the guy didn't. Why?
Okay, and Bill, again, you and I are, I think, on the same page about the origins. But when you saw the testimony from Sondland, when you saw Vindman, when you saw Fiona Hill's testimony, did you find that compelling? And do you believe the central point of the Democratic investigation, which was that the president abused his office by linking release of the military aid to Ukraine to his political favor?
I didn't, because the only people who were there to give firsthand testimony testified that the president did nothing and nothing inappropriate. The others were doing it from hearsay. That's my problem with what they were saying.
Mm-hmm. And if John Bolton had testified similar to what he published in his book, do you think that that would have buttressed the case?
Well, I think there would have been a lot of controversy about that, whether or not what he was saying was true. I think Bomb Them Bolton is not a good source.
All right, Bill.
I'm sorry. He is a warmonger, if there ever was one. I mean, what did we do in Syria and Lebanon and Libya and what are we doing? I mean, we're disrupting and causing turmoil all over the world. We got to stop this stuff. And we don't need more people like Bolton to go bomb people.
All right. Well, Bill, I always enjoy talking with you. Thank you for taking time today to join us. And we'll probably be doing this again.
Okay, it was my pleasure, Peter.
All right. Bill Binney here on the Peter B. Collins Podcast. Thanks for listening to this in-depth interview with the irrepressible Bill Binney. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.